You can listen to The Professional Left on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, or at our website, professionalleft.blogspot.com, where you can also contribute to this podcast. There's a PayPal button at our website, or you can mail us a letter and or contribution at P.O. Box 9133, Springfield, Illinois, 62791.
This is the podcast for August 23rd, 2013. It's not safe for work.
Recorded live from just outside the Maureen Dowd Transliteration Academy and Karaoke Bar, it's The Professional Left with Driftglass and Blue Gal.
Bob Seska's given us permission to kick his ass. Part of our show is going to be with Bob Seska next week. We have plans. So brace yourself for that. Look forward to that. Bob Seska is going to be on part of our show next week. Yeah, and we're going to be on part of his show, too.
Yeah, well, maybe.
If he can get his computer to work.
Now that Bob Seska has used his relationship to us
to get on the Stephanie Miller show,
we're pretty much dust beneath his chariot.
He's gotten a tongue bath from Stephanie Miller.
Yeah. Driftglass and Blue Gal who? What? What's your name? Are you on the list? I don't think you're on the list. So let's be clear to our audience. Mm-hmm. We get the script from the White House 2 days before, if we're lucky.
Yeah. Fax to us.
And then we have to go over what we're supposed to say by the White House.
You know what I hate the most, though, is all those marginal notes from Biden. I can't read his handwriting.
Yeah.
Too many exclamation points, too. Mm-hmm. Hey, everybody.
Empathy, bitches.
Empathy. We're going to talk about empathy today. But first, let's talk a little bit about Maureen Dowd. Because, oh, my gosh, she found her way into the news cycle, didn't she?
It's not like she doesn't have her own column in The New York Times. And for reasons, again, that passeth all understanding. Mm. Other than we know who she was sleeping with, don't we?
Well, yeah. I won't get revealed that she used to sleep with the
Aaron
creator
Sorkin?
Of the newsroom. Yeah. Oh, mm-hmm. You know, try to unsee that if you can.
Yeah. Wow. It's just so much wrong, Catholic wrong, media wrong going on there.
But maybe Maureen Dowd was walking while talking.
Uh-huh. She was.
Because she doesn't seem to get her quotes right when it's inconvenient for her to do so.
Well, the story first, quotes second.
All right.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the African-American wife of, I guess he's now the front runner for mayor of New York City. The progressive is the front runner.
I'm so far away from voting in the New York election.
I know that we just didn't even think about it.
I still follow Chicago politics pretty closely because I'm extremely interested in that. And I do like the line. Oh, I got to say, I forget who said it. That Mayor Daley was the Bernie Madoff.
Was a Bernie Madoff of big city mayors.
Yes, absolutely true. Yes, absolutely. And that is a perfect summary of what I saw when I was in the city of Chicago when I lived there and worked there.
De Blasio. Mr. De Blasio is apparently the front runner now.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is his first name Bill De Blasio?
Bill De Blasio.
Okay.
And his
Bill
wife,
De Blasio.
His wife is an African American named Shirlane McRae.
Okay.
She was being interviewed and mentioned the exact quote was that an opponent, Christine Quinn, who happens to be a lesbian, but that was not part of the quote.
No.
De Blasio's wife said that was asked why she thought, I don't know why she was asked this question, why she thought that Ms. Quinn was not rallying women. And McRae said, she's not accessible. She's not the kind of person I feel I can go up to and talk about issues like taking care of children at a young age and paid sick leave. Not because she's a lesbian, because she's not accessible.
But you need to read between the lines, which is what Maureen Dowd did.
Yeah, Maureen Dowd definitely did that for us.
And she'll go home and Maureen Dowd chalked it up to a noisy coffee shop and an inferior tape recorder.
Well, you know, I'll bet Maureen Dowd would go right home and cash her check, except she has it direct deposited. So
she does.
She's all set. But that was just a side thing. We really want to talk about empathy, bitches.
Yes, we do.
I had a kind of a epiphany, shall we say, this week, Driftglass, about abortion and the issue of abortion. And what made me have this epiphany was some of the town hall news that's come out. John McCain was at a town hall where a woman cried and said she felt like a moocher and a taker, but she wasn't, and that the government cutbacks I think due to the sequester, were forcing her to give up physical therapy that she needed. Mm-hmm. And she started to cry. And John McCain walked over to her and put his arm around her and said, "You're not a taker. You're not a taker." Mm-hmm. Which some Tea Party candidates refused to do, you know. And then there was another example of a young woman at Tea Party candidates town hall. A girl, actually, asking, "Why does her dad have to be deported?" And, you know, the congressman just said, "Well, because your dad's here illegally, he has to be deported, honey. We're sorry." And the crowd cheered as she sadly walked back to her seat.
Yep. Sorry.
John McCain's former aide.
Yeah,
this was on Chris Hayes. You know, really likes Obamacare now that his insurance company screwed him over and for several excuses, including sleep apnea. Uh-huh. Told him, "Oh, no, you've got pre-existing conditions, so we don't have to cover your cancer care."
Yeah, his name's Clint Murphy.
Clint Murphy.
Republican campaign staffer and supporter, John McCain guy.
John McCain, top campaigns. I mean, national campaign staffer. Yeah.
Well, and he's also supporting U.S. Senate candidate, apparently, Karen Handel in Georgia.
Who's
a right-wing nut job who wants to defund Obamacare. And suddenly, right in his wheelhouse, comes this personal crisis where, hey, you remember all that stuff we talked about, why we need a national health care program? Mm-hmm. Because the private sector will absolutely screw you because it is an amoral engine of profit. Yeah. And you suddenly became a liability.
And it's a life and death situation that cannot rest on profit of one person or one company.
And
your life cannot be hung in that balance.
Well, yeah. if the minute you become a net liability, they'll find a reason to cut you loose.
Absolutely.
And guess what?
If the law allows them to.
If they exactly. And you become a liability the minute you get sick. Yeah. So guess what? Yeah. Out you go. Yeah. And that's what the free market looks like when you don't have the government standing on its neck demanding that it treat people in a humane way, forcing the market to behave way by providing incentives or just providing an alternative to the marketplace when the marketplace is a complete abject failure. Mm-hmm. That, by the way, what I just said sounds to teabaggers like the Communist Manifesto as spoken by Hitler.
Until they go to their doctor on Medicare.
Exactly. Which is that. What I just said is our basic social contract in this country.
With seniors.
Yes. Well, with everybody over the age of 65.
Yep.
That's our basic social contract. But for some reason, that is now Das Kapit. That is now the Communist Manifesto. That's now the most awful thing any American disloyal, fascistic, communist, atheist, make up as many words as you like to hate on, drone glassy thing to say about anyone right up until it visits your backyard, like fracking. It's somebody else's problem and fuck it, let the free market take care of it right up until you turn on your tap and fire comes out. Then it becomes, well, can't we get past this partisan stuff and solve this social problem? And congratulations, you're a liberal now.
Yep.
We'll give you a button. And of course, immediately after that, you have to be thrown out of the movement because you've now become brainwashed by the Obama collective into believing all these awful things like we should, as a society, look out for each other. That we should put our values into action through the actions of our government. Conversely, when our government does things that are bad, like spy on everybody, we should hold our government to account for that.
Yes, we should.
But, and we should do it in a open and above board way and leave the hysterics and histrionics out of it.
I want to get back to town hall meetings for a minute to abortion.
Speaking of hysteria and histrionics.
Well, I was really impressed with a small businessman who talked to Representative Joe Heck of Nevada about how he had always paid a living wage to his employees and he had always provided health care to his employees for years.
Because he's a communist blue gal?
No, because it's better for his business if he does it.
Oh.
Self-interest says I'll have longer term, better trained employees who can afford my own product. This is the Henry Ford rule. You know,
who aren't out sick, who aren't terrified all the time.
Who aren't out sick and who won't quit because they have no reason to keep working for me over health insurance.
Mm-hmm.
So or wages. So he provides both of those. And now Obamacare is giving him a tax credit for the health insurance.
For doing that.
What happens when a Republican congressman is asked by a business constituent, why are you voting against my tax break?
Mm-hmm.
And his answer, and I really have to credit Crooks and Liars for pointing this out, his answer was, well, you know, it might be good for you as a small businessman, but big business is really going to hurt. Mm-hmm. And just throwing small business under the bus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, the Chamber of Commerce doesn't like it. You know, yeah. So we're...
Yeah. Walmart doesn't like it.
Walmart doesn't like it. So, you know, well, and Walmart does apparently provide a health insurance plan, quote unquote, for their employees. So they do more than some businesses do, but the Affordable Care Act is going to make insurance affordable for more people and help small businesses provide it for their employees. That is a fact. Let me get to abortion now, because this is where I kind of turned around.
Yeah.
Thinking about empathy. Oh, and I can't forget to mention the asshole at the Ted Cruz town hall. A woman stood up and was saying...
Just that one. Yeah.
Well, the woman who stood up and said, look, what are you going to do, Ted Cruz, about the millions of people in Texas who don't have health insurance? I have insurance and I still have to drive to Mexico to get my diabetes medication because it's too expensive here. And someone yelled out and heckled her. We could take care of ourselves.
I don't know who that we we're talking about is.
I don't know who the we is. Well, I assume it's...
Someone over 65.
It just reminded me of Otto West, who is the character that Kevin Kline plays in A Fish Called Wanda.
Yeah.
Of, you know, don't call me stupid.
Yeah.
Why on earth not?
Yeah.
And Aristotle was not Belgian. The central message of Buddhism is not free man for himself.
Because that would be an insult to stupid people.
Yes. London Underground is not a political movement.
I know that a lot of our listeners and people who read our blogs and read other things maybe don't immerse themselves in this stuff as much as we do every week. But what you get sometimes is the flavor of the aggregate impact of looking all over the political landscape and seeing all these crazy people.
Yeah, complete lack of empathy.
This is a direct result of the Republican Party getting the party they want. The federal government is...
The
party of hate, but it's also... It's the Confederacy.
Yeah.
We have completely sidelined the federal government by making it impossible to govern at the federal level, by putting sand in the tank. And then state by state, in coordination with each other, using ALEC as a template with a lot of Koch brothers money, rolling back people's rights and promoting this hateful, stupid, bigoted teabagger mentality to the point where these are the people who are showing up to these elections that are all but rigged now that they've been gerrymandered.
Yep.
And that's why it's...
They get to elect...
Crazy people.
Ted Cruz, right.
And that's why it's impossible to have, in a lot of cases...
Oh, I'm sorry. The Canadian usurper.
Yes. Yeah. You'll never see him in a gay bar with a...
with a honey. Rainbow hula hoop?
No, unlike Peter Dinklage, who's awesome.
There's a picture on the web this week of Peter Dinklage from Game of Thrones in a gay bar... He's riding that rainbow hula hoop, light up rainbow hula hoop.
Right to the White House.
Yeah.
But this is why it's impossible to a certain extent to have public policy debates anymore as we understood them when we were younger.
Yeah, because this is what we have to talk about.
The people who are on the other side of the issues are fucking crazy.
Well, this is what brings me to abortion.
Exactly.
I have always had a sensitivity. I have felt a sense of obligation to have a sense of sensitivity toward people who call themselves pro-life.
Yeah.
Because I have felt that it is very natural to love babies and to want babies to be healthy, to want babies to be born, et cetera. That's just human nature. And there's no reason why people shouldn't feel a sense of wanting to protect children and extending that to the unborn. I've always kind of felt like, okay, I have to give you that.
I give you your sincere instinct.
Your sincere instinct to protect children. I give you that. But it has occurred to me, finally, after going through a week of seeing this lack of empathy, just how much empathy the far-right anti-abortion forces have. That they have no empathy. North Carolina, you know, we're just going to shut all the clinics down. We don't give a crap where women have to go. There's no concern at all for the woman's side of the issue.
No.
The health of the woman is not considered. Mm-hmm. There is no empathy for her. And we used to talk about this and Al Gore used to talk about this a lot, common ground.
Right.
Let's find common ground and reduce the amount of abortions. And there's been studies, you know, the study in St. Louis that said that they were able to reduce the abortion rate by 75% by counseling fertile women about their desire for children or not, and providing them with health care that allows them to have children or not based on their wishes. And if you provide them with that kind of health care and that kind of advice, here's how you can prevent pregnancy. Here's how you can get pregnant if that's what you want to do. Here's how you avoid it if you don't. And empowering women with that much information and the ability to control their fertility, abortion rates just diminish way more than they even thought they could.
You mean you're talking about education and contraception then?
Yeah, that's what I'm talking about.
Which is against God's will.
See? But there's your lack of empathy. The central message of the Bible is not every man for himself.
Well, and actually, the Old Testament is. So, yeah.
The central message of the Old Testament is enjoy your four-hour erection.
Yeah.
Every woman is a prostitute.
And I get to have 500 wives.
Yeah, and I get to have 500 wives. That's definitely true.
Yeah. Anyway,
but that, to me, that's it. I am now to the point with this that... common ground. Let's, you know, we used to talk about that.
Yeah.
There's no common ground if you're just saying, fuck you, we're going to close all the clinics. And what if we could get to the point of common ground of reducing the abortion rate? There's another story this week about abortion where Republican congressmen spent our tax dollars writing to all of the state health regulators about abortion. Please write back to us about how dangerous abortion is to women. And they got letters back from the directors of public health for all of these states saying, no, we have no statistics proving in any way that abortion is dangerous to women. It's highly regulated and it's highly safe.
And that's just how deep conspiracy goes, Blue Gal.
It goes all the way to state health departments. Yes.
It goes all the way to your DNA.
See?
Your body, your body lies to your doctor.
For me. I know.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Look, so what... What has changed in my mind is as long as someone, and this goes to Sarah Palin too, counts for Sarah Palin too, as long as someone can paste a picture of a fetus's toes onto an envelope and make $100,000 in contributions from well-meaning sentimentalists.
Yep.
And that's what it is. It's not just human nature. It's sentimentality being bankrolled. Mm-hmm. By people who really don't give a shit about women. And therefore, there is no common ground. And I am done. First of all, I'm done being kind to the pro-life forces. Mm-hmm. On the ground, face to face, you know, obviously we can have a conversation. Mm-hmm. But they have no empathy for women.
No.
There.
No.
The other thing is, nobody ever tell me that this is a Christian nation. It is not a Christian nation. And the answer to that, if you hear that from anyone, is this is not a Christian nation. This is a racist nation. This is a misogynist nation that has used God talk to cover up their racism, their misogyny, and their hatred for people who are not white male patriarchs. I'm angry about something, Driftless.
You sound a little cranky.
Yeah, I'm getting hysterical. Maybe I need a tranquilizer.
That's probably the case. You know how you ladies get something. No, you're absolutely right. And I'm not mansplaining it, I promise. But this is why it's so hard to get rid of, because those were the timbers and concrete used to build mm-hmm. our culture.
Yep. Yeah.
The whole, I have in our podcast notes, should we get to them, couple of the secession letters from like Alabama.
Well, I was going to ask you to post those somewhere, like maybe we could put them on Tumblr or we could put them somewhere and link to them on our Facebook page and just provide me with a couple links in our document and I'll put them up in our podcast notes because they're long, but they make a really good point about states' rights.
And this has been
still going on today.
Yeah. It absolutely has. And the misogyny and the racism and the classism is what built the South. It built a lot of this country, but it certainly is the South incorporated it into their faith.
Yep.
That worldview. I'm not saying the North is immune. I'm not saying that Chicago wasn't racist and isn't still segregated. I'm saying that deeply incorporated into their view of government, into their view of faith, into the way that their faith should inform their government, up to and including burning crosses if necessary, to enforce their point of view. The, not currently, but in the past, is this sense that there are those people over there that are inferior to me, and I know they're inferior because God says so. Yeah. And therefore, therefore climate change is impossible. Therefore, women should be treated like chattel because the Bible says for me to do that. Therefore, blacks are inferior and not to be trusted. Therefore, Mexicans have calves like cantaloupes. Follow those ellipses back and you'll always find the same Bible interpreted by the same people in power to keep power and to keep people who aren't like them powerless. And which is why it's so brilliant of the right to basically decapitate the federal government. You know, we're just not going to have a federal government anymore. We're going to have a bunch of people sitting in Congress with a thumb up their ass going, yeah, you know what? You know what our next thing is going to be? Maybe we'll vote again to defund Obamacare.
Let's deregulate some industries. That'll grow the economy.
And in between, we'll rename some post offices. And you know what else we're going to do? We're going to hold your health care hostage to the global economy and see which one you choose. Mm-hmm. We're going to put guns to both of them and say, you got to pick one. That's the GOP. Now, if you think that behavior at the state and the federal level is absolutely paralleled and mirror imaged by the Democratic Party, then you should go find a third party. Mm-hmm. But if you don't, then getting these people the hell away from the levers of power has to be really high on your priority list. Yep. And finding the most practical way of doing that has to be part of your thinking. I'm not telling you what to think. I'm telling you that if you accept A, B, C, and D, then E follows. And you should do something about that.
You wanted to talk about Louisiana.
I did. Down in the great state of Louisiana, I'm trying to find the exact spot in our notes where I put this.
You didn't. It's not in your notes.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, I did. Oh. I have it under the heading Louisiana GOP demonstrates why we can't have nice things.
Oh, yes. That's down here. Number seven. All right.
Seven. See, we do have a list. We don't have a script.
Seven. Jack Jarmond. Rest in peace.
Jack Jarmond. Morton teeny tiny tabletop. See, I do remember.
You do. All right. So what happened in Louisiana?
The Democratic leaning, because we have to say that. Mm-hmm. Because if we don't, then, you know, then the conservatives won't believe us. Public policy polling did a poll of Republicans in the Bayou State when it comes to accountability for post-Katrina failure.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Thanks, Obama.
I think so, but 28% that think they think President George W. Bush might have had something to do with it.
Who?
Yeah. But 29% said it was Obama.
Yeah. He wasn't. He was a senator during the storm, right? Yeah.
A freshman senator from Illinois. But yeah, okay. And 44%, and this is where they have their teabagger hats on, are not sure who's to blame.
I don't know.
We're not sure. Excuse me. I just got done scraping my Bush Cheney bumper sticker off my SUV.
Right.
And let me just state for the record, I'm an independent. I don't know who's to blame for everything. All I know is the whole government sucks, and Obama's in charge of it, therefore Obama sucks.
Yep.
And that is, believe me, we are not channeling a cartoon voice of a made-up character.
No.
We are channeling, this is how these people cope with the fact they got everything wrong under W. Mm-hmm. They can't acknowledge that. Mm-hmm. And they can't acknowledge the fact that the GOP, that the entire GOP strategy is just destroy the federal government. Mm-hmm. So they have to hunker down in their own stink and hate everybody. Mm-hmm. Because directing their loathing where it belongs would eventually
turn it around to them.
Cause their head to explode. Yeah, yeah. And that ain't going to happen.
Yeah.
So it's just everybody. Everybody's wrong about everything.
And that's, there goes that lack of empathy. If you know deep down inside that eventually you're at fault and you cannot accept that, then the way to block that is to have no empathy for your fellow man at all, or fellow human. Speaking of empathy, because that's sort of the theme of the show, Bradley Manning, who is now what wishes to be referred to as Chelsea Manning. I mean, there's a guy who... Mm-hmm. Clearly, his life has for a long time been in need of healing, and I want him and everyone to know that I support him in his pursuit of healing. Mm-hmm. And I think he'll get out of prison a lot sooner than anybody thinks he will. So there's some talk about Obama pardoning him, you know, or there's a demand that Obama pardon him. There's going to be a lot of things that happen right after the election of 2016 before Obama leaves.
Yeah.
And I doubt that Obama would pardon Bradley Manning, but I could certainly see a commuting of the sentence at that point. And we'll see what happens.
Well, this is something I genuinely don't know.
Because, you know, that's what happened to Scooter Libby.
Well, Scooter Libby is a civilian.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
I don't know how much power.
I hadn't thought of that. We always mention that as part of the difference between Manning and anyone else is that Manning signed the contract to be in the military. Yeah, that's
active duty military. And the only reason I mention is I don't know. He might very well. I simply do not know if the president of the United States has the power to set aside military verdicts.
I assume he does.
I think he does. I recall Lincoln setting aside executions.
Yeah, because he's the commander in chief. So
I just don't know. But it would be certainly a decent and humane thing to do.
Can we play Guess Which Party with Carrie Bentivoglio and who was the other one?
Oh, I'll
State just, Senator Marbles.
I'll read one more there too. So
okay,
I'll take number 8.
Oh, you'll take number 8. All right,
and I'll mask the party and just read. Okay,
we're asking for these next three. You have to guess which party. Okay,
valuable this is prizes. Mm-hmm. There are no valuable prizes.
Congressman Carrie Bentivoglio.
Pretend you don't know where they're from.
He's from Michigan.
Pretend you don't know what party he's in. We're going to play.
Pretend you don't know what party he's in.
We're going to play Guess the Party.
And guess what year it was. Okay. You can guess what year it was. Because there was some talk about impeaching a president. And he said, until we have evidence, you're going to become a laughingstock if you've submitted the bill to impeach the president. Because number one, you've got to convince the press.
Yes.
Now, what party is that?
What party is so hell-bent on impeaching a president that they are willing to say publicly that, we don't have any evidence,
but
the goddamn media will make you look stupid if you try to impeach someone with no evidence.
Evidence.
So you really got to kind of get that shit in your back pocket before you go. Take a wild guess what party that's from.
Colorado State Senator Marbles.
Yeah, as in losing, comma. Yeah.
Yeah, as in dumber than a bag of.
Yeah, but still, you don't know what party she's a part of.
So. Gotta guess which party.
Mm-hmm.
She was at a committee hearing on, apparently it was on nutrition, health, and poverty.
Oh, okay.
To that effect.
I was incorrect then.
Okay.
I thought it was on rambling, incoherent sentences.
Well, yeah, it could have been that too, because she was there for that meeting.
Yeah.
When you look at life expectancy, there are problems in the black race. Sickle cell anemia is something that comes up. Diabetes is something that's prevalent in the genetic makeup, and you just can't help it, Marble said.
Mm-hmm.
Although I've got to say, I've never had better barbecue and better chicken and ate better in my life than when you go down south and I love it.
Uh-huh.
The Mexican diet in Mexico with all of the fresh vegetables. You go down there and they're much thinner than they are up here.
Yes. Even though they're packing,
they're packing 70 pounds of pot across the border. She didn't mention that.
No.
Then she talked about, she went on about, and then there are alcoholics, rageaholics, drug addicts. You have people, they say, who are addicted to porn. And the chair interrupted her then to say that she was being repetitive and making her point. And could she please ask a question of the people who had come to answer questions of the panel?
So put a ring on it, lady.
Yes, I can.
Mm-hmm.
Her question was, the war on poverty started in 65. Now, why do you think, when we had certainly, some problems, but not like we have now. And we've had this war on poverty going since 65. Do you know why? Do you have any ideas?
I'm just asking a question. Well, she didn't mention, of course, that the war on poor people started long before 1965.
Started in 1465.
Yeah, and is extremely well-funded.
1265.
Yeah. And that a whole lot of senior citizens haven't died in poverty thanks to Social Security and Medicare.
Right.
So, it's one of those wars that we should certainly have opened up and revisited.
Well,
and I was thinking that
makes me think a lot about the war on poverty, and it's like having a war on Iraq and saying, but we're not going to fund the ammunition.
Right. Right.
And so we had that war on Iraq, but we didn't give any bullets to the military, so it didn't work out real well.
So, hey, what are you going to do, And it was there were bad things that fell out of social policy in during the war on poverty, and those should have been fixed, and they weren't. They got institutionalized, and that's a bad thing. But there was always the fear that if we reopen this debate, someone from we don't know which party would come swooping in and say, okay, let's just get rid of it all.
Yeah.
Let's go back to a purely market-based Darwinian approach to who gets to live and die in this country. And
that's where we're at.
And guess what? We're there.
Yeah.
And the third thing I wanted, this is Guess the Party.
Guess the Party.
You
can't name the senator because everyone will know who he is.
It would be wrong. But the Obama administration's apparent coordination with the campaign arm and the White House leave me no choice but to investigate, said a senator from some party. I also find it quite interesting that to end this week of coincidental events on climate change alarmism, certain liberal media is showing a climate change special, MSNBC, with reportedly no interviews from those challenging the theory. There seems to be a coincidental coordination between the White House, the president's campaign, and the liberal media that is weaving a false and potentially harmful narrative of alarmism. This agenda will leave our nation less secure, less prosperous, and less informed. I will work to shed light on the coincidence of coordination in the Obama administration that we continue to see unfold.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to launch an investigation mm-hmm. on the coordinated effort among various people, starting with the White House, to talk about climate change in a way that doesn't reflect my Bronze Age, pig ignorant, disgusting, hateful, ass backwards biases. Because we have to teach the controversy. Both sides have to be represented in this. Now, just go down those lists.
Not to mention that this specific senator
mm-hmm.
went on a pro-coal campaign tour for other Senate candidates
mm-hmm.
around the country.
Mm-hmm.
Wonder who was funding that.
And is it,
wonder if we really dug into and investigated who was funding his travels
mm-hmm.
directly or indirectly.
And this senator works on the Environment and Public Works Subcommittee in the Senate, which is very exciting.
That's very exciting. You can go ahead and let's tell our listeners who that is.
Yeah.
They've already guessed.
Yeah, that would be the Republican Party.
Yeah, and it's Jim Inhofe of Oklahoma.
Which, please remember, is every bit as bad as the Democratic Party. Every bit as bad.
They're the same. Okay.
Exactly. I remember the Bush impeachment. I remember the Bush impeachment over nothing. I remember the Democratic liberal media ginning up charges against George Bush that were completely baseless, spending 8 years making shit up about Bush and then impeaching him for no reason other than he's a good, God-fearing man who liberals hate. I remember that distinctly because that's what happened to Clinton and that's what they're gunning for to happen to Obama. So I assume since Democrats are just as bad and just as pernicious and just as mm-hmm. Destructive, mm-hmm. that must have happened during the Bush years. During the time of peace and prosperity that we now know as the Bush administration. So, you know, I don't remember any, like the internet, I have no memory. So I'm just going to assume that all that happened. Anyway, I believe we were talking about empathy, which I seem to be lacking.
Well, and I wanted to add to that there is a complete double standard regarding women in politics. If a Democratic woman stood up and it was as stupid as the state legislator Ms. Marbles and just that incoherent, the right-wing media would never allow, and the party itself would never allow that person to stand. We don't have idiots like that in our party. But we would be so hard on the woman.
Yes, we would.
That dumb.
Yeah.
That it would never happen. And there's an article in Salon that I found fascinating called Why There's No Female Nate Silver.
Uh-huh.
And it talks about how the internet treats women.
Mm-hmm.
There's no question that men take controversial positions in the media, and they come in for loud and vigorous criticism. Women who do so, however, can expect rape threats on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
They can expect to be told they are too fat or ugly to have a valid opinion on anything. They can expect the suggestion that instead of speaking, they might prefer to fellate their male readers. If they are non-white, they can expect other racialized forms of abuse. So while controversy can be a rough and tumble game for some male commenters,
mm-hmm.
for women, it's a decision to put their mental health on the line. And I'm a tough broad.
Yeah, I can vouch
and
for
I
that.
And I don't have a lot of empathy, I guess is the word, since that's mm-hmm. what we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
For women who enter the political debate and then are wilting flowers and want everyone else to be responsible for their feelings.
Right.
That's different than rape threats.
Yes.
That's different than, you know, threatening someone's children.
Mm-hmm.
And there does seem to be, particularly on Twitter.
Yes.
A sense that it's just permitted.
It's a free fire zone.
That way. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think that's going to change because there are women on Twitter that are activists and getting people. But there is a difference between threatening someone with rape and giving, you know, retweeting somebody as a form of ridicule.
I have nothing to add to that because I'm a man.
Don't mansplain it to me.
And right. I have nothing to add other than I'm in complete concurrence and agreement. Mm-hmm. Everyone on the left who was a blogger in 2004, 5, 6, 7 mm-hmm. was called everything yeah. but a child of God mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. constantly
yep.
by the right. So that's sort of the game.
If you've survived that and you're still in this game, you've got tough skin. Yeah.
But
and I'm not telling women to get thicker skin. I want to.
That's a different. But that's a different thing than threats of rape, threats of murder, threatening your family.
Yeah.
Which you see on Twitter all the time. And the thing that we might want to discuss at some future time, because I think it's fascinating, mm-hmm. is the schizophrenic nature of some people on Twitter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That who have
a vicious.
They have a straight monster. Job. They have, you know, yeah. you have people, yeah. and I will mention perhaps David Sirota, who is treated.
Botox and spray tan look awesome,
they do.
By the way. And good job.
He's great. And I don't want to get into a thing about any of those people other than note that.
Fabulous.
That Chris Hayes, who I like and admire, keeps a very special pair of very soft kid gloves for times when his friends are on his show. And he never asks them hard questions. He never pulls out things they've actually written and said, yeah, but you said this crazy ass stuff. And your article about Trayvon Martin was not
well
this
received.
Benevolent desire to bring together these disparate aspects yeah. of the liberals. Yeah. No, that's not what you wrote. Yeah. But my point is this. The civilized, well-behaved, well-groomed face mm-hmm. of mainstream reporters, mm-hmm. mainstream people who are on your television, who are in your newspaper, is often very different than the voice they present on Twitter.
Yeah.
And nobody ever pulls their tweets out and said, but here's the crazy shit you said.
Yeah.
And ask them to be accountable for.
That's the thing. Right.
And it's almost as if there's just this, I hate to say it, gentleman's agreement.
Yeah. We won't mention how crazy you were on Twitter because everybody's drunk on Twitter. That's
exactly.
the thing, right?
Exactly. So it's okay. It's
yeah.
cool. You know, what happens yeah. on Twitter stays on Twitter, except it doesn't.
It doesn't. And let's get into this thing with women, because I did get an email from a listener asking me to sort of bump up this story. And it's a story that's long past now. The person involved with it has been suspended from Twitter, so I'm not going to get mm-hmm. into details. But Storify is a app or program that allows you to scoop up tweets if someone has been back and forth with someone else on Twitter.
Right.
So if Glenn Greenwald is fighting with name somebody, I don't know who's he had a Twitter war with lately.
Oh golly, everybody. The
everybody.
Independent. And this is an example. I don't want to talk.
This is an example. Greenwald. We're not talking about Glenn Greenwald, but no. You can go if you want to actually pull that conversation out of Twitter and have a place where people can go and read a conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Let's make a funnier example. I'm tweeting back and forth with Ann Romney.
Right.
All right. We're talking about her horse. And you can go and pull all of the tweets in Storify and publish that conversation as a page and refer to it, which makes it really easy. If you're having a political debate with someone on Twitter, people can actually go back and read specifically what was said back and forth in one page.
So you're telling me that if Ginny Thomas was deep in her cups some late night and started slapping you around on Twitter.
Yeah.
You could actually string all that together into a narrative.
Flies, exactly.
Oh, how handy.
String it all together and have a URL for that conversation.
Well, beats actually writing.
Spotify does.
Beats actually writing. Maybe no. T-Bog should do that.
T-Bog could just join Storify and be all set. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So apparently, though, there was a person on Twitter who, last I checked, has been suspended from Twitter. So I just want to say that's water under the bridge. But apparently he was using Storify to gather women's tweets in a rather creepy way. And in a way that some women, and I was not one of them, and I found out about this after this person was suspended, so I'm really not involved with it. But apparently there were complaints made to the CEO of Storify of, look, you need to ban this guy. He's gathering together tweets specifically to harass.
Yeah.
And specifically to make people uncomfortable. And you need to ban this person from using your forum to do that.
May I make a brief aside?
Mm-hmm.
As opposed to gathering up your personal information to sell you crap, which
right.
Google does every day. Read your emails, scrape your emails for personal information every day. Yeah. So
this activity on the part of this man, apparently on Twitter,
uh-huh.
was creeping some people out.
Yeah, it would.
But the Storify CEO said, look, this is what Storify does.
Yes.
The program doesn't make value judgments. It just lets someone scoop up tweets that you've written.
And string them together.
String them together. That's it. That's all it does.
Mm-hmm.
So it's kind of hard to see how Storify is involved in this, you know. And my feeling, and I wrote back to this listener to say, look, as far as I'm concerned, Twitter is the bulletin board at the grocery store where you put up washer for sale. I need a babysitter. I need a dog sitter. I can iron your laundry. You know, it's advertised.
I think you mentioned this last week, too.
Did I? Okay.
Yeah.
The bulletin board.
Yeah.
And you cannot monitor it 24/7. What will happen to your message? Someone might draw a phallus on your flyer.
Yeah.
And you don't have any control over that.
Mm-hmm.
Therefore, it is not a community.
Right. By definition.
By definition. It is not a community.
It's the spot next to the urinal at the bar.
Exactly. Where you put your business card if you want to, but somebody's going to draw a dick pic on it.
Mm-hmm.
Or not.
Mm-hmm.
And you're never going to know, or you'll find out 3 months later.
If I may tell a short story, Blue Gal.
Sure. But I just want to say, don't expect people on Twitter, don't expect Twitter as a community to respect boundaries or
at all.
Don't use it for that.
No.
It's not a community.
If I may say, once upon a time, a very long time ago, before I knew you, before I knew about blogging, before the internet, not before the internet, but it was around the time that having an application on the internet was a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Businesses were poking sticks at it. I was at home, probably smoking a pipe and thinking deep thoughts and stroking my chin beard. And
I'm so glad I met you when I did.
Yeah, thinking about how wise Ayn Rand is, probably with a girlfriend. And the phone rang, and it was a local gentleman offering some sort of sexual services to me because he had seen my phone number scrawled. This was back in the heady days when you used to have adult bookstores with actual peep shows in them, mm-hmm. actual little booths and actual, I suppose they exist somewhere in the Smithsonian now. But I hopped in my car, or I believe at the time it was a horseless carriage, and went on down to the local purveyor of fine pornography and went to find that there was a back wall in one of the peep shows where lots of people had been scrawled.
Wow.
And this was somebody I probably knew from work who probably thought it was funny or vengeful to put my name and contact information on the wall of a peep show.
Wow.
That's Twitter.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's not a community. It's an open
sewer.
And
that doesn't mean that people can't have hurt feelings over things that are said on Twitter. I get that. But don't expect Twitter to protect you because it won't. It can't. It's not there to do that. And
if you want a community, go over
I've blocked lots of people on Twitter. And I don't do Twitter drama. And with liberals or conservatives, I just don't do it. Block. Block, block. Life's too short.
Yeah, well, actually, if you want to read a Life's Too Short quote,
mm-hmm.
Go over to James Walcott and see his farewell to T-Bog.
That's a good post. Yeah,
it's a good post. You know, sometimes at some point you realize Peggy Noonan, David Brooks ain't going anywhere.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter what you
say.
You've
got to decide whether you can still have fun with that or not.
Yeah, they're not. They're institutions. You're blowing spitballs at a form of Mount Rushmore.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not going anywhere. Mm-hmm. So if you can continue to have a good sense of humor about that, great. But if not, time to leave.
Time to leave.
And I'd like to mention at the extreme opposite end of the empathy scale from the horrible third circle of hell that is Twitter. And I'm on Twitter, mind you. I use
Mr.
it as
Mr. Underscore Electrico, by the way.
Mr. Underscore Electrico is me on Twitter. and I don't hassle the person out there named Driftglass. I believe she is a gamer and a very prolific and good writer, but she has nothing to do with me.
She doesn't have anything to do with political blogging either.
No, not at all. Just leave her alone.
Yeah.
But I'm out there. I use it as a cheap search engine. I check out what's trending because there are stories that do rise up there much more
quickly. Oh, yeah. And that is a wonderful Twitter. I'm not dissing Twitter because if you think something has happened and you're not sure, Twitter is the place to find out first. Absolutely.
Don't take anyone's word for it. But if you suddenly see Elmore Leonard trending.
Yeah.
You'll find out Elmore Leonard passed away, which is very sad.
Well, and you'll find out it's not a fake, you know, it's not a hoax.
But
sooner on Twitter than
three clicks away. So it has its uses. Yeah. But at the extreme, but understand you should be wearing your codpiece and your hazmat suit and your breather when you go in there.
Wonder Woman shield.
Yeah, really, really. You should be dressing like Walter White to get in there because it ain't going to be pretty. But at the extreme other end of the third circle of hell of Twitter, I want to mention Antoinette Tuff.
Oh, yeah. Well, we all love her.
We do. And it should go without saying, but it shouldn't go without saying.
No.
That as much as we...
Empathy was the shield that she had.
Yeah.
In that situation. And by the way, she's the person in the school office who very sensitively stopped the shooter who just wanted to go to the hospital and not get shot.
Who managed to lay his hands on an AK-47 and 500 rounds of ammunition.
Yeah. And a backpack full of bullets, yep.
And went to a school, started shooting out the door. Nobody was killed. Nobody was hurt. And she, because there was no place for her to run, she reached deep within her personal reservoir of love
empathy.
And passion and church.
And
a whole lot of church going on there.
Don't forget that. Absolutely.
And she's the woman who's probably at your kid's school or the kid in your neighborhood who loves your kids.
Yep.
She's She's probably a union thug.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, she probably, well, maybe. Yeah.
We don't know, but there are a lot of union thugs like that out there. Who really, really care about your kids and take those jobs because they love your kids and they want to look after them. Mm-hmm. And she just unleashed on this guy.
Yep.
She made it her business to make him feel like
he was loved.
Cared.
I love you, she said.
Talked him down.
Yep.
And how
long had it been since anyone had said that to him?
Yeah.
You don't know. I mean, I think about that all the time. We have people we know you and I saw a couple on Sunday who by Tuesday she's in intensive care.
Again.
Mm-hmm. And life is so fragile. And how long do people, I don't know. First of all, I don't know how a lot of people get up in the morning without feeling a sense of love, but a lot of people do.
Mm-hmm.
And we love you, listeners. We love you. And I mean that.
Mm-hmm.
I hear from so many of them, of our listeners every week. And actually we had a listener write us somewhat critical of you.
Yes.
This past week.
Shocking, I know.
And both of us wrote back to him.
I have a lot of empathy for you, son of a bitch, but I'm gritting my teeth.
Well, and he was trying to be on top of things.
I mean, it wasn't.
And you defended your position, and it was about Twitter, which is hilarious.
Well, I did it in a non-defensive way. I just said, here's,
both of us said, look, you know, this is what he did. This is why he did it. This is the situation, and we're really grateful that you gave us feedback.
Mm-hmm.
Driftglass can, and I, when I wrote to him, because he had other issues, and I said, this is interesting, but I'll let Driftglass defend himself, his own work, because he can do that just fine without me.
Mm-hmm.
But at the end of, and I don't mean at the end of the day in a Michael Steele way, I mean literally at the end of the day, he wrote back and said, wow, you guys do respond to your emails.
Yes. Sometimes I'm really bad in some other ways.
Well, but
it's been a long time since I wrote thank you notes, for example. But
we write to people, and we do read your emails when you write to us. I have a Gmail label that goes on anything, and it says podcast correspondence, and I see those in my email and know, okay, that's somebody who's writing to us from the podcast email, which by the way is proleftpodcast@gmail.com.
Mm-hmm.
Those get highlighted in my email stream as being more important or something that I need to pay attention to. So we love you. We care. and we respond. And I could say that goes without saying. The thing is, it shouldn't go without saying. Yeah. You need to say it every once in a while.
And let me just say, the reason
got to wind it up now, but
I wanted to mention Antoinette Tough is she's so much better a person than I am. And I think it is incumbent upon, you know, low life perverts like me. I've never said anything other than I'm low and perverse on my blog. That's the bar I set for myself. I try to be a little bit better than that. Sometimes I am. But aspiring to be like the best person you know is not a bad way of going through life. And trying to make sure the person that you think is the best person you know is primarily empathic, does not hit you with a whole bunch of capitalist, Darwinian, market-based, let the poor perish because they're unfit to survive. That isn't empathy. That's the opposite of empathy. And people who tell you empathy is a weakness, mm-hmm. which is basically everyone who's a Randite, are lying to
you. They're lying to you. Exactly.
Empathy is an incredibly powerful thing, as Ms. Tough demonstrates.
Yes.
And that lie is one of the big lies that we are put on this earth to push back on.
Amen. Mm-hmm. Each week we post to our Facebook page and website an Internet Kitty sent in by you, the listeners. And this week's Internet Kitty is Gwen. Gwen is pictured with her horse friend, Prinny. And Gwen sits on a fence, and she does not budge from her perch on the fence just because Prinny comes within 3 inches of her to get a carrot. Eat your carrot, horse. This does not affect me. Mm-hmm. So she just sits there.
Gwen does not do drama either. So.
No, Gwen does not do drama. You're going to eat your carrot right in front of my face? Go ahead. Mm-hmm. You can send your Internet Kitty to us at our email address, proleftpodcast@gmail.com, where you can also write to both of us. Feel free to write us. We love hearing from you. And be aware that if you write us at any of our addresses, we reserve the right to read your email and or U.S. Postal Service, Go Postal Unions, letter on the air, unless you say otherwise.
So, Blue Gal, how are those Internet Kitties doing this week?
The Internet Kitties call All In with Chris Hayes, SpongeBob for grown-ups.
Let's think about living. Let's think about loving. Let's think about the hooping and the hopping and the bopping and the loving, lovey-doving. Let's forget about the whining and the crying, the shooting and the dying, and the fellow with the switchblade knife. Let's think about living. Let's think about life.
The Professional Left Podcast is recorded under a Creative Commons license. Copyright 2013, Driftglass Blue Gal Podcast.
Minecraft is awesome. Now it's time for Science Fiction University with our science fiction expert, Driftglass.
So we have a brief question on our Science Fiction University. By the way, I do want to give an attribution to the closing joke of the podcast.
Yes.
In that middle child was the one who came up with, you know.
It made me laugh.
Her timing was wonderful.
Right.
Something to the effect of they were watching SpongeBob and you made a joke about, you know, there is SpongeBob for grown-ups. And she said, yeah, Chris Hayes. It was just that good.
It was somewhere Jack Benny is smiling.
Yes, it was
absolutely perfect. Deadpan comic timing.
Thank you, middle child. The apple does not fall far from the tree.
No. We just got an email from friend Patocchio, who passed along a wonderful link about the internet reacting to Heath Ledger as the Joker.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Apparently, it wasn't universally received with great applause.
How can Heath Ledger play the Joker? He's blonde.
He's going to ruin everything. Are you kidding me? This guy's a mumbling idiot.
Yeah.
How can he play one of the three key villains in Batman? Mm-hmm. Can't be done. So I shot him a note back at my shock at discovering that, A, the internet has a memory.
No, they don't.
Because that's really inconvenient for a lot of people. So that, of course, will dominate the news cycle today. The Affleck,
he's not playing it in a Batman movie. He's playing it in a Superman movie. He's going to play Batman. Correct?
Yeah. That's hair splitting. Your laser vision.
That could be. I mean, we'll see how it goes. We don't know who's directing it, do we?
No.
I mean, well, whatever.
Joel Schumacher, come on, Joel Schumacher.
And Ghost Shark came out way earlier than I thought it was going to.
What did?
Ghost Shark.
Oh yeah.
I thought they were saving Ghost Shark for Halloween, but no.
You can't save Ghost Shark, honey. It
apparently, they
to
can
be
turn
free.
Around these movies in 90 days. That's what they are a money making machine. Over
yeah.
There. All right.
We should do that. We should go to filmmaking. Screw this podcasting stuff. We saw.
We'll have $1 million.
We saw a recording of Roger Ebert last night talking about how it costs $3,000 to go a movie maker.
Yeah.
So I say we just punt on this stuff and go for it. So
our friend Kevin again has written us again.
Oh, okay.
And
hey, Kevin.
He's a great friend of ours. So, and he has a quick question, but I think it's one where we can dig in and maybe you can give us several examples that would be helpful to people of science fiction. I was recently reading a review of the new science fiction movie Elysium.
Yeah.
And he notes that it doesn't matter whether anyone has seen Elysium yet. I never see movies until they're on DVD. He hasn't seen it. But the reviewer mentioned that one of the complaints about this movie is that its message was heavy-handed.
Yeah.
I bring this up because a couple of podcasts ago, I could have sworn Mr. Glass briefly mentioned disliking H.G. Wells' work once it got preachy.
Yes.
My question is there a good way to do socially conscious message fiction, regardless of genre, but let's stick to science fiction because this is Sci-Fi University, or is it always annoying to be told what to think? And maybe we can give some good examples of science fiction messaging science fiction that doesn't preach or does preach, but does it well.
The same director.
What are the secrets of that?
From the same director, District 9. I like District 9 a lot.
Yeah, District 9 was really good.
It was clearly about apartheid and about how we treat outsiders and what happens when one of us turns into one of them, which is a very constant science fiction theme. It's what does it mean to be human? Who counts when we're counting humans? Do robots count? Do aliens count? What are their attributes by which we let them into the club? And I think District 9 was a perfectly fine movie and a very good example of blending your social message with a story. But the story has to, I hate to say this, and I'm gonna go all writer's room Walter White on you now. Breaking
Bad. You love that show, Walt.
I do.
Writers Room is really fun. It's fun to listen to writers talk about their work. Yeah.
I'm a sucker for The Dick Van Dyke Show and 30 Rock for the same reason. It's a look into the writer's room. However tidied up it is, it's a look into the creative process. And the writers on, I will absolutely loop back, because I've seen Remember Miss Bluegal saying that once upon a time, isn't Breaking Bad science fiction?
Yes, I just said that
and
last
That's week. A really good point. The writers there saying how much they enjoy problems that stem directly from the character's personality, not a box they have to get out of. I remember a mystery writer talking about sticking his character in a closet and trying to figure out a way to get him out of it. I think it was Tony Hillerman. And he literally sat with his character for days or weeks trying to figure out how the hell do I get out of this this museum at midnight just with the contents of his closet, and he thought it out. The kind of problem solving they like on that show apparently are the ones that come naturally from the characters. And these last few episodes, you can see this is straight up Greek tragedy. This is everybody's character flaw traps them into a course of action that puts them on a collision course with everyone else's character flaws. Their virtues.
And in many cases, a collision course with disaster that they cannot avoid because they are doing what they think is the right thing to do.
Yes.
And that's because so important. Yeah.
Their virtues are every bit as important as their flaws. They love their family. They want to protect their sister or their sister-in-law, whatever it might be. They're all programmed on a collision course. And
Go ahead.
Oh, please, after you.
I remember an interview that Alan Rickman did when he was in that not wonderful version of Robin Hood, where he played the Sheriff of Nottingham and stole the whole movie.
Yes, he did. And ate all the scenery.
And he said that one of the things that's really important to do when you play a villain is realize no one wakes up in the morning thinking, I'm going to do evil today.
Right.
Except
for Barack Obama. But
But they have a sense that everything they're doing is right from their perspective. And your villain will never be believable if it's simply twirling the mustache and I love being evil and tying women to the railroad tracks. You know, this The sheriff of Nottingham wants power. He wants a relationship. He wants this, this, and this, and here's how he's going to get it, and he makes him a bad guy.
Yeah.
And you see that with, as you say, every character in Breaking Bad.
Yes.
Comes down to they feel like they're doing the right smart thing because their motive is, and it, very often their motives are very similar, family.
Yes.
It's protecting my family is
protecting,
so important. You know?
Because I'm going to die.
Yeah.
I need to provide for my family because I made this horrible mistake years ago and I have nothing. I need to provide. How will I do that? Mm-hmm. And so you can take something really simple like Chinatown, mm-hmm. which it boils down to find the girl.
Yeah.
Find the girl. But, oh, my God, when you apply plot and character and time and actor's skills and a really good writer, you get this amazing piece of work. So the thing that I liked about Breaking Bad, and this is science fiction university, but I'm going to loop right back to it, is the writer is talking about how they spent thousands of hours, hundreds or thousands of hours, breaking the story, arguing over everything, not punching each other in the face, but really arguing each point. What would this person do in these circumstances? And then what happens? And then what do they do? And then what happens? And really marching it through as close to real life as possible. And if you grow your social message out of that, then you have a compelling story. If you grow it out of, like District 9, if you grow your social message out of this real life conflict and these real people who have this real state security mission, and you can throw in as many corrupt bureaucrats as you like, I'll never hold that against you, then your social message is powerful. Mm-hmm. If you decide, hey, I really want to write a story about how awful it is that X, Y, and Z happens, and you take modeling clay and you just lump it into something that drags your characters from one place to another to make your point, it doesn't work. It might satisfy you. It might win awards. I don't know. But it wouldn't satisfy me as a work of fiction. And that's the point. Science fiction is fiction. And fiction applies – and fiction, good fiction – does certain things to your heart and your head that can certainly drive a compelling social message, but it can't be the primary source of your story.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, I hope that answers the question.
Yeah, well, and I was going to use the example also of that Star Trek episode, Let That Be Your Last Battlefield,
yeah.
with Frank Gorshin,
yeah.
as being a good example of, I mean, it's sort of broad and...
Black and white.
Black and white. It's sort of in black and white. But the closing scene of that... Mm-hmm. You know, is Watts. It's yeah. not, it's, yeah. you look at the view screen of the planet they're going back to, it's so clearly a city on fire
mm-hmm.
over racial argument, you know, over racial disagreements and so forth.
And it raises, I'm not going to necessarily use Star Trek as the great vehicle, but I would point out.
Some of them are better than others, and that's one that's on everyone's top 10 list of being.
And I'm going to be biased to say Harlan Ellison's somewhat cut up script, but still his script for City on the Edge of Forever
yeah.
is
yeah.
a man asked to choose between the woman he loves and the future.
Yeah. yeah.
And this really awful paradox that if her social philosophy, which is completely morally correct and upright, and is actually the pillar of the foundation of the United Federation of Planets, as it will be in 200 or 300 years,
mm-hmm.
if it flowers too soon, it will permit Hitler to take over the world.
Yep, yep.
And the alternative is she gets hit by a car and she dies. Sorry, spoiler alert.
Yeah.
And it's those are the kind of things that are so engaging because you really can get right up close to the character and say, okay, what would I do? Mm-hmm. Really? If this really were the woman I love most in the world, and making the stakes that high and putting them in those kind of contexts is what makes great fiction and great literature. And by the way, I saw – speaking of great fiction and great literature, I did see, I think it was a lolcat for, or it was a motivational poster, whatever it was, for Game of Thrones. And it was George Martin saying, every time you bug me about writing another book, another Stark is going to die.
Very good.
Yeah.
Very good.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Kevin. You can send your science fiction questions to me alone because we want to stump Driftglass.
Yes.
Send them to mrs.driftglass@gmail.com and we'll get them. And if it's not something that Driftglass has never read, we'll read it on the air.
Oh, also check out City of Men.
Hmm.
What happens when we can't have children anymore?
Well, and that's the theme of Handmaid's Tale also.
Yeah.
Same thing. I was going to mention Handmaid's Tale, but I feel like I've mentioned Handmaid's Tale too many times. But
if you're going to go rent a couple of dozen Battlestar Galactica, modern Battlestar Galactica episodes, where they take on the issue of abortion.
Yep.
Which is, there are so few human beings left and we're dying. Can we permit people to terminate pregnancies anymore? Mm-hmm. Because we need as many people as we can get. And there's all these really, you know, there's a prison ship. There's no more society. The civilization has collapsed. What does it mean to be a prisoner on a prison ship when you're just another few thousand of the 50,000 human beings left in the universe?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it really does raise good questions about who gets to be human, how do we treat each other? What happens when someone you love does something unforgivable and there's no choice in the end but to sort of forgive them and move on?
Mm-hmm.
And it's themes like that. If you build a powerful enough engine, you can put a lot of social messages through it and get really good stories out of it. But if trying to, you know, placard or buttonhole your reader is your first goal, that's, in my experience, usually going to shine through.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Thanks again, Kevin.
Thank you, Kevin. All right.